Big D and Bubba. They have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind. So they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast.
How about that for an intro?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. We're going to jump right into this. Against the Grain is a book written by Coach Bill Courtney, who is the coach from the Oscar-winning documentary Undefeated, which if you have not seen it, it is still on Netflix. Go and watch it before it goes away.
Is he the first Oscar winner that we have?
No. We've had
other Oscar winners.
What's the guy from Dancing with the Wolves? He won an Oscar.
Oh, Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
The guy from Dancing with the Wolves.
Who's that dude? You know, if you build it, they will
that's
come.
That's what he got.
I think he's done a couple things since then, y'all. I think that's...
Yeah. I don't even like Dancing with the Wolves.
Why would I say that? I don't remember seeing it.
Tatanka.
I saw it, but like, I don't... I think I saw pieces and parts in hotel rooms.
Dancing with the Wolves is like, you turn it on, and it doesn't matter where out in the movie, you're seeing the same thing. Every time you go to, you're like, oh, I saw this. Oh, no. Did I? I don't. It's all very.
Is it good, though?
Blend. I don't know. I don't think so.
There's a problem. I hadn't heard anything you've said yet because I keep doing that jingle in my head over and over.
The podcast. Hey, real quick before we dive into everything, we're going to get a little plug out for our friends at Valvoline because they are awesome. Did you know that it took 39? You ready for this, Coach? Did you know it took 39 different versions to make the American flag just right?
No.
39. Just goes to show you that great things get even better when they're reinvented. Valvoline has been reinventing motor oil since they introduced it to the world in 1866. Crazy. And as the only American-owned oil company, Valvoline thought it was about time to celebrate the legacy. And for a limited time, you can get a free American flag when you buy 5 quarts of Valvoline motor oil at a participating retailer. Stars and Stripes, we salute you, baby. Got our hands on our hearts and our foots on the pedal. Our feetses.
Hold it. I got to go. Valvoline's the only American-owned oil company?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Who would have ever thought that? Well, you have to buy Valvoline now.
Yeah, you have to.
Well, you can't support the enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
What is wrong with these people?
Commies.
Valvoline, 140 years under the hood. Go to Valvoline-USA.com for more information and check it out because, well, they're awesome and they're American-owned.
Bill Courtney is joining us. He is the author of Against the Grain, a new book that he's got out. And
a new Valvoline user.
And he is now a Valvoline.
It's American-owned.
A Valvoline convert, baby.
You got it.
I am here. By the way, I think it's pretty cool that the book is made up of stories. Well, there's like 36 different stories in there.
It's 14 chapters, 14 tenets, and 36 different stories of different people from all walks of life to kind of illustrate and explore those tenets.
You're telling us the story before we went on.
We're like, just wait. Let's talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah. Start all over. Share the whole thing with us.
Well, civility is one of the chapters in the book. And I was a student at Ole Miss when some of you may know the story, when Chucky Mullins hit Brad Gaines on the 6-yard line in Vaught Hemingway Stadium. And immediately his spine exploded and he became a quadriplegic. And Brad Gaines at the time was, I think, the first or second leading receiver in the SEC. He was a junior. He was definitely going to the NFL. Tough guy. Hated Ole Miss. Brad will tell you he hated Ole Miss. And Ole Miss later that year made it to the Liberty Bowl to play Air Force. And Brad went to visit Chucky in the hospital for the first time since the incident happened 6 weeks early. And when Brad leaned over to talk to Chucky, who had a respirator on and was – Chucky died a year later. And when he leaned over, Chucky looked at him and said, "It's not your fault."
Oof.
And Brad quit football.
Wait, he just quit?
That was it. Done. I can't do this anymore. And to this –
Was it the guilt of the hit that –
Brad is an emotional guy, and I've spent a lot of time with him. Actually, he drove all the way to Memphis to come to my first book signing on the 31st. This thing's been, they've done 30 for 30 shorts on ESPN about it, and this is the 25th anniversary of the incident. Ole Miss, when they have the Chucky Mullins Courage Award, and every year some player's wearing number 38, which was Chucky's number, obviously, and they rub a bronze bust of Chucky when they enter the field. He really, This is back when Ole Miss was still waving the Confederate flag in the stands, and this is back when every 3 seconds Dixie played, and there was a real mixed understanding of Ole Miss and where they stood on racial issues. And Chucky kind of fixed all that through his injury, and Brad was there when he died. Brad slept in his car in the parking lot of Baptist Hospital the 3 days when Chucky got in.
Golly, are you serious?
Chucky to this day still goes to Russellville, Alabama 3 times a year by himself and replaces his flowers and cleans Chucky's gravesite on Christmas, Chucky's birthday, and the anniversary of the incident. Has done it for 25 years and goes alone and spends 2 or 3 hours with Chucky, and he just calls it their time. Chucky and Brad became best friends.
Wow.
So you have this white guy from Nashville playing at private Vanderbilt, and you have this black guy from Russellville, Alabama, who was raised by other people, and they collided this one day from such divergent worlds, from two fierce rivals who really hated each other back then, and this unbelievable, chilling friendship lasted for 1.5 years until Chucky's death, and 25 years later, Brad Gaines is still caring for Chucky.
Isn't it, as great as that story is, isn't it awful and a shame that it takes such a tragedy for that to happen?
Yeah, it is, and that's one of the discussions in the book. And I'm here to talk to you guys about whatever I want to, but look, I've got a $45 million lumber company and 120 employees. I've got offices in Shanghai. I've got offices in Ho Chi Minh. I've got 4 kids and a beautiful wife. I didn't write a book because I want to make a bunch of royalties. I swear to you guys, it's not what it's about. I could care less about that. We got to talk about some stuff. And I don't even have to be the moderator of the conversation, but if I can get people to read Against the Grain and think about the stuff that's in it and maybe just start a conversation that we badly need to have, maybe we don't have to wait until Chucky Mullins breaks his neck to start thinking about civility, and maybe we don't have to wait for a lot of these things to think about it. And yes, I think it is a shame. These kind of conversations should be part of our daily lives, not something we visit on Christmas.
Yeah. You know, I always remembered, and you just brought that up, the visit on Christmas. It was not in Undefeated. The documentary Undefeated, you've got to see. It was so, my wife was blown away. I made her watch it.
It's not a football movie.
It's not a football movie. It's a life movie. And we're planning on, we haven't picked the weekend, but we're planning on making a Friday night movie night at the house, and we're going to watch it with all of our kids.
Good.
You know, a 13, 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old. I know there's some stuff in there that's a little, you know, they're dropping a couple cuss words and whatnot. But
no, there's not any big
ones. Yeah, it's not too bad, but I think they've got to see it because I want them to understand that, you know, you can do anything if you put your mind to it. And the movie covers a lot of that. But more than that, it's the little stuff like you were just talking about, like, you know, not just picking things for holidays and whatnot. And there is something you said one time. We saw you speak at St. Jude, and you talked about the turkey person story.
Yeah.
And
that's also in the book.
Is it really?
Yeah, sure. It's
Big D, do you know the whole turkey person thing?
I don't think so.
You want to know something about some turkey people?
What's that?
Okay. I'm going to tell you about turkey people.
Turkey people?
What's a turkey people?
Turkey person. So my first year at Manassas, we're 3-3. Now, remember,
Manassas, by the way, is a inner city.
It's a school I coached at football that's very, 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 very. Well, you have to see the movie to fully understand it, but it's all
median income in that area is less than $8,000 a year.
That's correct.
Okay.
There's the 12.5% of the homes consist of a married couple, and here's one for you. Fewer than 40% of the people over the age of 20 have a high school diploma or GED equivalent, and 0.3% of the people have a college education. It is abject poverty and loss, and it's on second, third generation. So anyway, show up. Their previous 10 years record was 7 wins and 93 losses, and my first year were 3-3 at this point of the season, and they thought I was some fat, redheaded version of Newt Rockne. They were pretty excited about that. I'm doing all right, right? Plus, we got new uniforms, pregame meals,
right,
riding on nice buses.
Yeah.
Things are going good. And so I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. And I got half the team buying in to the important stuff, character commitment, the dignity of hard work, understanding the scourge of entitlements and political correctness and all that. The other half of the team, not so much. Now, they were all buying into the football stuff. You know, X's and O's, yes or no, so very respectful on the football field, and we're having some success. But the minute football practice or games were over, half the team was doing their homework and be respectful teachers and show your mind, not your behind, pulling their pants up, that kind of thing. The other half the team was rolling. You know, they were still on the street corner, destructive stuff. It was driving me insane because I wasn't there to coach football. Segway. I always say this. I don't coach football. I coach kids who play football. It's about coaching the kids, the tenants that are in against the grain. And then when you surround yourself with an army of kids that understand that stuff, winning games is not hard. So that's my focus. And I go to my guy. Every coach has his guy. And I say, hey, man, how come I can't get that half the team to do what your half the team is doing? And he said, kind of dismissively, just keep doing what you're doing, coach. Now, this is the guy that when I went to him one time, a guy said, hey, coach, can I borrow $3? And I said, no. He said, man, you're so green. And he walked off, and I was like, I don't know what that means. And so I went to my guy, and he said, well, that means you're stingy. And he explained stuff to me, you know, because I had a
– it's your translator.
I had a certain reality that was different from that reality, and I needed a little bit of a help kind of acclimating. And he was my guy. And we talked very openly about a lot of stuff. But when I asked him what was on team, he just dismissed me. He said, don't just keep doing what you're doing. I said, no, man, real talk. Tell me what's up. And he said, coach, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I said, you are not going to hurt my feelings. Why can't I get that half of the team to act like your half of the team off the field? And he said, coach, they're trying to figure out if you're a turkey person or not. And I said, brother, I have no clue what you're talking about. And he said, coach, every Thanksgiving and Christmas, people look like you from your neck of the woods roll up in our neighborhoods, and they drop off hams and turkeys and gifts and stuff. And we take them because we ain't got none. But then we never see them again.
Good Lord. Makes you
wonder if they're doing that because they really care about us or to make themselves feel good.
God, give me goosebumps.
And
dude,
I will
me in the face with a brick, bro.
I will quickly tell you guys, I have been a turkey person more often than not.
Because
you think of, you know, how many of us have gone and done, like, you volunteer at the soup kitchen?
Do we have three more minutes to tell you something
else? We could go for hours.
Okay, so here's the deal. You ready?
Yeah.
This I didn't have time in the speech to tell you. So here's the next part. I was pissed. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you're mad because they called you a turkey person.
Let me tell you why I was mad. All right, immediately, everything wells up in me. Dude, are you for real? You're no longer riding up and down the street on cheese. You're in a charter bus. You're no longer wearing ragged stuff. You're in brand new uniforms. You're no longer wearing 7-year-old non-reconditioned illegal helmets. I got you brand new Riddells. You're no longer wearing tennis shoes. You got $100 cleats on your feet. You're no longer showing up to games hungry. I got folks coming from all over the place cooking you great pregame meals. We're 3-3. I've been here every single day. I could be with my own children who at that time were 3 or 4, 5, 6, and 7. I've got a business I'm trying to build that's very difficult, I'm telling you, I drove off thinking these ungrateful sons of guns, what the hell am I doing this for? I was pissed.
Yeah. Because they think you're just doing it for you and
I mean, really? I mean, is there such a divide between white and black that you can't even trust that I was actually doing this for the right reasons because I'm a white guy that you perceive as being rich? I was pissed. And here's what happened. My life during that year, those 6 years was at work at 5, work from 5 to 3, get to Manassas at 3:30, practice Manassas 3:30, 5:30. But the deal was I was not going to coach Manassas and not my coach my own children. So then I'd get in my car when Manassas was over and drive like a bat out of Hades to practice from 6:30 to 8:30 with my own kids' team that I also coached, then go home, catch some dinner, get a little nap, up again. And
every day.
And so here's what happened. I didn't have time to change out of my Manassas coaching gear after Manassas practice and before my kids' practice. So I would just show up my kids' practice, which was, you know, elementary school stuff. And I was wearing my Manassas stuff. Well, at 3-3, a school that hadn't won much, there's an article in the Commercial Appeal called the Manassas Miracle. Right. And it was me on the front and everything else. And it was awesome. And it talked about the kids being successful and everything else. And so I would show up. And so, you know, I'm doing some radio about it in town and the article, and I'm wearing the stuff. And so people are starting to hear about how this lowly Manassas team's finally turned around. And so I'm out at my kids' practices, and all these people are walking up to me going, man, Bill, I'm starting to hear about this. You know, what's up? And I'll be like, yeah, man, it's amazing. I got them winning. I got them at 3-3. And they're like, that is awesome. I cannot believe Manassas 3-3. And yeah, I got them pregame meals. Like, that's awesome. You know, like I got them doing their homework. That's awesome. I got them being respectful. I got them. And my 6-year-old son, Will, looks at me one time after one of those conversations and said, Dad, I said, yeah. He said, what are your players' names? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, I know all that you've done for them, but I don't know who they are.
Mm-mm.
And I said, holy crap, I'm a turkey person.
Yeah.
I was digging. Everybody slapping me on the back. I was digging. Everybody buying into me being this great white savior of these poor black kids.
Yeah.
I was the epitome of what that kid was telling me. And the truth was, that half of the team, they weren't wondering. They were just seeing. They were looking right through me, man. They authenticated me as a fraud because I was talking about character, commitment, service, and sacrifice and civility and all
these
things.
And yet you're going, I got you this bus. I got you these meals.
And then I'm sitting here saying, look how wonderful I am.
Yeah.
And, dude, I'm telling you, I flipped right there. It was like the lights came on. And I went back to that team and apologized. And I said, guys, you know, every once in a while, a truth is revealed to you in your life, and one has been revealed to me. You guys are the ones sleeping in tubs, so drive-by bullets don't hit you at night. I go back and sleep with my doors unlocked. You guys are the guys that are getting beat out of gangs in order to be part of a team because of the rules that I've made. I've never been hit. You guys are the ones that are actually doing work in the schoolroom and being called sellouts and Uncle Toms because you're actually changing the way you're attempting things. You guys are the ones that are buying into these principles that I'm begging you to buy into, and I'm taking all the credit for it, and I swear to you, I will never do it again. And I learned chapter 2 about leadership. One, you never assign blame when there's problems. You take it. The buck stops with you. But two, and most importantly, a true leader gives all the credit of successes to those who are making those successes happen. And in Manassas world, those were those kids, and I quit using the word I. That's the value of understanding what a turkey person is.
Oh, God. I feel like a goob. Yeah,
exactly, man. It was humbling when I heard you tell the first part of that story because I went, God, man. And I told my wife that story, and she's like, we've done that. And I'm like, yeah.
Sure you have. Yeah. Everybody has.
Yeah.
And it's not a – look.
It's not a terrible thing. It's good that people are doing that. However, we did it for us. We were like, hey, let's do something good.
Right,
and that was the thing. Let's do something good. Okay, well, it's a holiday. Let's go and do this. Let's.
And that's nice, and there's nothing wrong with it, but you got to do it for the right reasons.
You've got to follow up. And I think that's what I learned the most listening to you talk that day. It was about not just doing the act, but following up on the act. And don't just give of the item or whatever it is. Give of yourself.
That's it.
When love is the core, it'll always be right.
That's absolutely true.
Because if I love Bill and I really care and love him, I will do the right thing regardless.
More importantly,
I will show up at Christmas and give you the turkey.
You know,
but
I'll
also be there when you are having problems with your car and it's not starting. You need somebody come over and help you warn your starter.
Love is consistent, brother.
Yeah.
That's it. You know your buddy at the old place?
Yeah.
You heard from him lately?
No.
Not much love.
Yeah.
Because that transcends things like that. Civility and perseverance and love.
And you know, it's, you know, you're telling that story, and I went through a big thing with pride. Pride was a huge thing with me. And I thought I was fine. And then, man, a year and a half ago, I just got worked over, just a spiritual working over, and I realized I would talk the talk, but I was exactly where you were. I was. Don't they? You got mad. You got mad because
you
had pride. You
don't understand. You got mad enough. I called my wife and said, "There's no helping these people. I think I'm going to quit.
Yep.
They're crazy.
Yep.
And but see, that's the thing is when you get out, comfort zone. It's also a chapter in the book.
Before you tell the story, Against the Grain is the book. Against the Grain, Bill Courtney. Okay, go ahead.
When I have been hit in the mouth enough, when the world smoked me, when 120 employees have driven me nuts, when my kids are acting like idiots and I've had it, I go to my comfort zone. Y'all got one. I know you do. This may be it, this place. That would be mine if I was right.
Bubba's
here,
is PlayStation.
It really is. It,
that's cool. When
I
you
disappear,
want
I disappear into my PlayStation.
It's awesome. You got to have one. Everybody's got to have the place to recharge their batteries. Mine is, I'm not kidding you, it is a leather chair. It sits about 7 feet from a TV, and I'm telling you, everybody in my family knows that's my chair.
And it's a dark room?
Many times it is, other than the TV.
Usually I turn everything off but the TV, right, and I'm good.
So I don't have a whole lot in common with Archie Bunker except for the fact that I have a chair like he did.
Right.
It's my chair. Everybody knows it. When you check out the cushion, it perfectly matches this enormous – it's my chair. My kids' friends know you don't sit in
print.
It does, dude. I've been in it forever.
I call it the butt groove.
It's cool. I mean, even the arms of it are shiny from where my mutton joints kind of rest, except for one little spot where the remote control rests, so I don't even have to hold it. All right?
That's right. Just your hand just –
It's my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's got to have one. Some people it's friends. Some people it's PlayStation. Some people it's maybe a little cafe or restaurant where they can have an espresso or a glass of wine.
In the backyard.
Some people it's a backyard. Whatever. Everybody's got to have one. But here's what I've noticed. Nothing amazing or profound has ever happened in my life when I was in that chair.
True.
Ever. And until you are ready to both physically and mentally and spiritually get out of your comfort zone. Don't expect your world to change because it won't. You have to get out of your comfort zone. And when you do, the things that you're able to create and have happen are wonderful. But what's amazing is the multitudes of things that come back to you. And I was out of my comfort zone at Manassas. And when they talked about the turkey person thing, it made me angry. But what I found out is that by getting out of my comfort zone and having an honest, open self-appraisal of what I was listening to and being civil and getting out of my vacuum and quit thinking literally and start thinking broadly, I learned maybe one of the most valuable lessons of my life. And you can't do that plopping down in your leather sofa or on the Sony PlayStation in your backyard. You got to be willing to risk yourself and get out of that vacuum. And when you do, your world changes.
Yeah. My dad said when I was younger, the truth always hurts when it should.
And that's so good.
And, you know, somebody will say something, I get real mad, and then I go, and I have to stop myself. I'm mentally, you could see the brakes go, and I go, well, you know what? Is there some reason why that hurt? And then I look at it and go, well, maybe there's some truth to what they're saying.
Do you know what Mitch McConnell said within 6 weeks of President Obama being elected to his first term?
No.
My number one goal is to make sure that Mr. Obama is a one-term president. Now, let me just stop. Politically, I don't agree with a whole lot that President Obama's done. I do agree with some things. I don't agree with a whole lot. I'm probably fiscally right and socially a little left. So I don't really know what party I belong to. So I just, that's a segue to tell you that Mitch McConnell said my number one priority objective is to make sure that President Obama serves one term. And I remember thinking, you know, that's revolting.
If that's your number one worry,
your number one
you're forgetting
goal
what
to,
you should be
your
doing.
Your number one goal is to legislate and serve this country,
yeah,
and make it as easy as possible for all of us to have a happy, healthy life and not give us that, but pursue happiness. And if you are one of the leaders in Congress and your number one goal is a political fight with a dude in the White House because you just don't think like him, and that's what your job is as a congressman, is it any wonder why we're so broken?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, are you serious?
I completely think we need to reboot the whole system. I think if you're incumbent, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever. If you're incumbent, I'm gunning for you. I'm going to vote the opposite way.
Okay, good. Did you ever play Defender? Do you remember that
game? Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, do you remember when you're running through Defender and all those mutants and all around you, you had one button, you just went wham, and it just wiped it?
Yes.
I think it was a smart bomb.
Yes.
Or whatever. Yeah.
It's
like
EMP.
One of those Defender things. Whip. Yeah, clear it out.
Boom.
I think I just told you that I'm old.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's a great.
They've got all those games. You can still get them.
Yeah, they're awesome. I love them. But the point is, we are just so far off track. I mean,
are we too far off track? Are we too?
No, we can reset.
Are we put things too
nothing
far?
Nothing is ever too far.
The sun is coming up tomorrow, and there's air in your lungs. It is a great opportunity every single day to make a difference. Here's the other thing about character and all of these things. One of the most beautiful things about it is it's a decision. It is simply a wake up in the morning, look yourself in the mirror, I'm going to do this better today. It is simply it's not an involuntary muscle response. Many of us will never make it to the NBA, but every single one of us can demonstrate civility and character. Every single one of us can demonstrate commitment. Every single one of us can understand the dignity of hard work. Every single one of us can work on our legacy. Every single one of us can show grace and forgiveness. It is a decision you make. It is never, ever, ever too late.
Do you
can you come to like hang out with us every week, about once a week?
Yeah, I take this place.
15 minutes, we're good, man.
You know what I need? I need a Coach Bill app that like.
Well, you've got it. It's on Twitter. It's Coach Bill Says. It's got all these great quotes and all these things like that.
You need to have a button, and you just hit the button, and he said, and you go, let me tell you something, son.
All right, so.
The sun's going to come up every day.
I do. I got an answer for you. Ready? Against the Grain is also an audio version, and I wouldn't let anybody else do it, so it's me. So if you want Against the Grain, don't want to read, and you want to listen to it, put it in and listen to it, but it's my voice. It's me. I didn't let anybody narrate.
I'm an audiobook fiend.
There you go.
Bubba thinks because he listens to a book on audio tape that he's read it.
Well,
listen. Stop. You answer.
Stop before you go on. Okay, go ahead. Say it, and then I will defend myself.
I will say, what are you doing? What are you doing for vacation? I'm going to read Against the Grain.
Right.
Oh, great. Are you taking the book with you? Well, yeah, I've got the book. No. I mean, do you have
the physical paper book?
Do you have the book? I've got it on my phone. You're reading it off the screen? No, I'm listening to it. Okay, so you're listening to the book. You're not reading the book.
It's still reading the book. Digesting everything that is in the book the same way you would. Whenever you're reading it with whatever voice you read with.
We've had this argument for years. Would you let Bill? His final word says
no.
If that's
because
you know you're
change.
Wrong.
No,
because
my
you
core,
know it's
it
not
counts.
Really reading the book.
If I listen to the book, it is reading the book. Are you saying that a blind person reading an audiobook is not the same?
Yes, I'm saying that if you're blind, you are not reading the book. You're listening to the book.
All right. Anyway,
I'm not sure Against the Grain's in Braille.
Well, it should be. The good news is it is an audiobook, so it is available to everyone.
Yeah, it is.
So what do you do now? What do you you have the lumber? What is your lumber company?
American
classic,
Hardwoods.
Classic American Hardwoods.
And what is it? What do you do?
So in 2001, I was the vice president of a pretty large lumber company and decided I could do it myself, so I quit.
That sounds familiar.
Had a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old. Both our cars were company cars, so I had no ride. And basically hit reset. And
it's exciting, isn't it?
It's scary. It's exciting. It's scary.
It is scary, but it's like you're living. It's like you're like, I'm finally living.
There's moments where you're just literally scared of what is coming
how
next.
How are we going to do it this month?
I know I keep going back to it. In the chapter on perseverance, you can read about this story. But in 2007, Well, the hardwood lumber industry produced 17 billion board feet of lumber in 2004, and in 2007 it produced 4. Right.
Why?
The economy kind of went crappy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
The Great Recession.
Gotcha. Yeah. I didn't know if there was some other.
Oh, no, man. I'm in the lumber business, so imagine what happens when building goes bad, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm a fledgling company just having started to get over this hump, got about 120 employees, just starting to make a little money, and then we get hit in the face with what the world hit us in the face with. And
this is 2009?
So 2007.
Yeah, 2007.
Lumber companies on the front edge of all things down and all things up. And I get my books for the previous month, and we've lost $111,000 that month. That month, y'all. I am not a wealthy guy. That was like half of everything and I laid in bed. And I got it on a Friday, and I laid in bed, and I stared at the ceiling. And what I was trying to do was figure out how I was going to tell Lisa and our kids that we were about to lose our house, have to move an apartment, and start over, and they were going to have to move, and they were going to have to change schools because we couldn't go to that school anymore. That's really what I was sitting there thinking about, is how am I going to do this? And then it dawned on me. I sit here and preached all my players' character. And the value of the true measure of a man's character is how he responds to adversity. That anybody can be a champ when things are going great. And I scream it to my employees. I scream it to my kids. I scream it to my wife. I scream it to my football players. And I'm laying in bed acting like a little baby.
Yeah.
And I got out of bed, got the books, and started going through them. And then Sunday after church, came home, started doing the same thing. And that following Monday, I went to work and I laid off 64 people. And
that's a tough decision.
Oh, dude. And in addition to laying off 64 people, I cut goods and services and vendors from you name it. I even called the light, gas, and water company and said, I got to have help. And I got a 20% reduction on that. I'm talking about everything. And I cut about $140,000 a month in expenses on one day. And
that, which day, pretty much brought you back to about even.
Yeah. Yeah, that allowed me to survive, not make any money, but to survive. And it was the biggest haircut you could imagine. And I'm telling you, that night I drove home and I bawled, because all I could think about were these 64 people going home having the conversation that I feared I was going to have.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
All right. And today we're back over 120 employees. We're on 50 acres. We've got offices in Asia. We do about $30 million in sales overseas, and just about every single one of those people that got laid off either has their job back or has offered their job back and had another job. And it's because we didn't sit around and wring our hands and hope and wish. We acted. We looked ourselves in the mirror. We were honest. We understood that action is required when you persevere, and we did the hard work, and we survived. And when when our industry went from 17 billion board feet to 4 billion board feet, over the next 2 years, my business doubled as a result of the tenets that are in this book. And what I'm saying is,
so when everything else was going south for everybody, your business increased.
I doubled it. I literally doubled it.
Which really set you up as things would start to pick up.
And now that the world's picking up, we're doing great. We're doing really, really well. I mean, I'm doing better than I've ever done professionally in my life right now, as a result of decisions that were made 6 years ago, as a result of understanding the dignity of hard work, understanding perseverance, understanding character, understanding commitment, and understanding that these tenets work in your family, in your business, in your politics, everywhere.
So what you're saying is, whenever I get in those funks, instead of going partaking in a big giant thing of cookie dough, I should just go do something about
it. There's nothing wrong with eating the cookie dough while you're doing the work.
Okay, as long as I'm doing the work.
As you can see, I've had plenty of cookie dough.
Because I'm all about the cookie dough. I'm a stress eater, man. I'm like,
Listen, let me tell you something else, man. Find this interesting. Okay, 50% of America, it's 48% now, of American marriages end in divorce. Okay, 42% of the American public is on some type of government assistance for their basic sustenance. An article came out in the Commercial Appeal 5 weeks ago that I read that I still can't believe, but it's true. Of the 6,200 juniors in the city and county school system in Shelby County, according to minimum ACT standards, a public school system, according to the minimum ACT standards, 320 are college ready, which is 5.6%.
Wow. And that's in Memphis where you live?
Yeah. Compared with Manhattan, that is 48% up over the last 8 years from 30%. So nationally, in our public school system in urban areas, it's right at 50% of our kids are prepared for college. Now, again, that doesn't mean you have to go to college. I'm just looking at basic education. It's just educated for anything. So do you find it interesting? Do you just find it interesting that half our kids are educated, that half our marriages are ending in divorce, and that half of our public is requiring something from the government to survive?
What's the connection?
We're failing. We're absolutely failing. All the government money in the world and all the smart, pretty people in D.C. will never fix the problem until we go against the grain of where society is today and where public opinion is today and get back to the basics. We can go forward and be inclusive, like I said. We need to. Society is going to progress and evolve, but we had better understand the values that your grandmama tried to teach.
So you're saying basically that that as of right now, half of the populace has kind of given up?
I don't think they're going to give
up.
And
maybe is it trying?
Failing. I think
well,
they're
then why are they failing, though? That's the question.
Because if I say, here's a basketball and there's a court, go out there and play basketball, but I don't tell you the rules and I don't coach you and teach you on how to properly play the game, you're going to look like an idiot. It's not that you're not trying.
It's just you don't know.
People confuse motion with progress all the time. It's what's our basics. What are being taught? We don't teach civics in school anymore. What are we teaching our kids?
They don't teach civics anymore?
No, sir. They do not.
Wow.
Have you ever watched the Jay Leno show back when they did jaywalking and they'd ask people, you know, who's the Speaker of the House or just obvious stuff?
Yeah.
And they don't have any clues because we're not teaching this stuff anymore. And I'm going to tell you something. I talk about D.C. a lot, but they're easy targets. So my question is, you know, what are you teaching the people down the hallway in your house? You know, you can get out of your comfort zone and serve and lead with not even getting out of bed. What's up with that spouse you got? What's up with those kids down the hallway? You don't have to be elected or own a big business or be tapped or ordained as somebody to be a leader. We need to start doing that at home. And that starts with that stuff and teaching these things again.
We had a church on Sunday. Our pastor was talking about leadership. And one of the things, and it's something I've always believed in is, and I tell my boys, is that I have one son who's really into athletics and I have one who's not in it at all.
Right.
But he's a really good magician.
That's cool, actually.
But he
it is cool.
I tell my youngest Gunner that he's really into baseball and that kind of stuff. And I told him, listen, he's on a team now that's kind of it's lacking a leader. Mm. And I said, from the team. And I said, the leader is the one. I said, it's easy to find out who the leader is. The leader is the one who is serving everyone else.
You're so right.
That's the one. And it's real. And I told him, I said, when you serve someone else, it looks uncool to your peers.
At that age.
And I said, when you get and it looks, you feel uncool, that's when you know you're doing the right thing.
I love that. This is also in the book on the chapter on leadership.
Did you write a book?
There's a book.
What's it called?
I don't know. Against something. So here's the deal. When you look at the greatest leaders of our time, they served in order to lead. Look at Gandhi. Look at Mandela. Look at Martin Luther King. And it's so obvious that if you shut up and listen to the people that you seek to serve, you will find out about their fears, their goals, their inhibitions, ask questions. The person controlling the question, the conversation, is not the one talking. It's the one listening and asking the questions. They're the ones directing the direction of the conversation, and they're the ones getting the information by asking questions. So they're controlling it. So when you want to lead, shut up, ask questions, and listen. And then when you get that information, you'll find out about people's fears and inhibitions and goals, and then seek out to help those people quell the inhibitions and fears and help to reach their goals. And when you do that and you're not a turkey person, and the people that you seek to lead recognize that you're serving them for their benefit, they will recognize, hey, this person's got my best interest in mind. I'll follow them. And then by definition, you're leading.
Right.
That's how hard it is.
And it goes back to what we said. It's about love.
It's okay, but you can do that with your children. You can do that with your spouse. You can do that with the guy in the next cubicle. We don't have to have, you know, you just don't have to be elected or have the corner office to do that, man.
It's as easy as this, if you're listening. It's as easy as, and I mean, it's a principle. And it can be done on a global scale of world leaders, or it can be brought all the way down to you are in the kitchen, guys, and you see that you have two pieces of chicken. One's going to be yours. One's going to be your wife's. And you look at the chicken, and one has got, like, you kind of messed it up. And, like, when you put the spices on, it all kind of came out at once. And it cooked into the chicken skin. And so you got this, like, you got this spot of, like, lots of Tony Sacheries. And it's like, whoa, you know it's going to be wangy and wacky tasting. Don't give that to her.
Nope.
You take
that
it.
One.
And you know what? You never tell her. You don't.
Well, and if
not
you make a production of it, you've screwed
just,
it up. And
you're
you
just
might
a turkey
well,
person.
You're a turkey person because of the chicken, which is odd.
You're a chicken turkey person.
You're a chicken turkey person. But it's, turkey person? The whole point is... You when you point
turkin,
out
turkin.
The things that
it's
you're
turkin.
Doing,
it's turkin.
You ruin them. It would be better to just do
nothing
than to do something good
yes.
and point it out.
Yeah,
it's gross.
There are lots of times when I realize I'm going to tell someone a story, and I go, "Am I telling this story because
you're telling it for you,
or am I doing it for the edification, really
right.
helping someone?"
Which, and this is not. All shucks, false humility, or trying to be disingenuous or anything else. I mean it with every fiber of my soul. I don't make one dime of royalty off Undefeated. I turned it down. Nothing. Never have.
On the documentary?
Never, nothing. Not $1.
Never really?
Have, promise you.
Wow.
Never. Not one single red cent. Don't want to. They can do. I hope they sell 17 million copies of it and all the release and all the Academy Award stuff. Nothing. I never wanted what I learned my first year about turkey person. I was so afraid that detractors would come to the kids that I'd coached at Manassas and say, see, the only reason he did that was to get the fame and the money from a movie. I mean, it was 6 years. They showed up our 6 year for five yeah. years. I didn't, you know, we were just coaching and our story got told and that's it. But I was so afraid that someone would go to one of our players and say, see, that wasn't real. He did it. So I just said, no. And
you told the players, I'm not taking any of this, so...
There's nothing. I don't want anything. No, nothing.
Good.
The speeches and the book and shooting the pilot for the TV show and the other thing that's going... There's stuff there to pay for my time and all. But the reason I'm saying this is that book, Against the Grain, I'm telling you, I don't care about getting a royalty check or anything. I was offered five different... publishers, and I took the lowest advance because I felt like they'd let me do what I wanted to do. I am so passionately concerned that we really start thinking about these tenants again. I'm not at work today. Nobody paid me to come up. I mean, I'm all over the place trying to get people to just sit. It's 206 pages. It's an easy read. Just read the book.
Bubba can listen to it, and
talk about it with your spouse and your kids, and then tell your friends about it, and just, you know, that 80% of us in the middle, if we'll just get real about the important stuff, we can make the 10% crazies on either side just shut up and not matter anymore if we'll just do it.
I want to go through some of the chapters here just real quickly. You've got number one, the value of character. Number two, the meaning of commitment. Some of the things that we've talked about here on the podcast. Number three, leave your comfort zone. Number four, service is not someone else's job. It is yours. That's what it's about, to serve. Number five, how leaders are defined. Six, the search for civility. Seven, the power of dreams, which we obviously, you know, we're living our dream right now. It's not perfect. It's our dream.
It's a cool story in there, too, about dreams. Go ahead.
Well, I can't wait to listen to it there, Big D, just for you. The relationship between fortitude and fear. Perseverance never takes a break. The dignity of hard work. Standing on a firm foundation. Responsibility for the taking. And let's see, we've got grace appears in a forgiving heart. And the gift of legacy. And that is all covered in the book. And I'm glad you got the legacy part, too, because, you know, what are we leaving? Not only for our kids, but the community and everything else.
It's really important. Men especially, I think.
Well, the problem is so many people think their legacy is what they leave in a will and all their possessions. And that is so wrong. Albert Pike was a Freemason back in the 1800s. He said, what we do for ourselves dies with us. What we do for another stands forever. And just real quickly, you know, guys, if the dirt won't even be splattering the top of the box that your cold, dead body lay in before people start arguing over who gets what. And if that's your legacy, you're pretty shallow. You got a problem. There's got to be something much deeper than that. And then so we have these wills, and we fret about all this stuff we've worked so hard to accumulate in our life, and we separate it up evenly, and then we die. 3 days later, everybody cries, goes away, and then about a week later, the people you care the most about, let's say it's my four children, show up to an attorney's office, and then they're going to get their subsets of legacy, if that's what it is, your stuff,
yeah,
right? And so they're going to take their stuff, but by then they're married, and they're going to have their pile, their 25% of your legacy sitting in the living room, and they're going to go, well, that's okay, and we'll keep this. Now, remember, this is stuff you worked your whole life to accumulate and fretted at the end of your life to make sure you were fair with, because it was really important stuff. And then they're going to take about 15% of their 25% that they get and put it around their house or use it in their house or money or whatever, and the rest of it's going in the attic.
And or the garbage.
Or the, well, probably the attic, because they would feel guilty of throwing that ugly piece of crap.
It'll go in the garbage eventually.
Okay, well, not yet, because here's what happened. And then the other. So now your legacy was separated into four subsets, and now it's got eight subsets, the subset that's being used and the subset that's in the attic. And then about 4 years later, when your heirs start building their own accumulation of a legacy, they run out of room in their attic for their stuff. So then they say, well, it's spring. I got an idea. Let's have a yard sale. So then they all get together in somebody's yard, and they put your legacy that you worked all your life for and fretted over how it's going to be separated with a $20 tag in the yard. And then at 6 a.m., you say in the paper, we're open at 7, but 6 a.m., here she comes. Everybody's known her who's ever had a yard sale. She's the one driving the 72 Caprice Classic, badly needs a ring job, rolls up, runs in your yard, looks at the $20 marked tag piece of your legacy and says, I'll give you $5. And your heir, who's worried about all this stuff that you've accumulated all your life, looks and says, well, it's either $5 or I got to put it in the back, put it back in my attic. And she takes the $5, and then the person in the Caprice Classic gets in their car and runs as fast as they can up to the next dead guy's pile of crap in somebody's front yard. And if that is what your legacy is, you are in trouble. A legacy cannot be sold in a yard sale. It does not have to be separated. It can be left in 100% totality to everyone you love, because it is about not what you've accumulated, but what you have done. And we have got to understand that and start working today on creating a legacy that matters.
What's the Albert Pike quote again?
What you do for yourself in this life dies with you. What you do for another lives forever and is immortal.
Love
it's in
that.
The book.
Love that.
It's in the book. You can go to the Table Index and look up Albert Pike and go right to that one. Oh, no, you can't. You are going to listen to it.
Yeah. Nice. But I've got the book.
Nice. That's nice. Yeah. Dude, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
So glad we finally got this to happen.
Oh, me too, man. I mean, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you getting the word out. And, you know, again, y'all, buy the book. Read the book. Just buy and read or listen to the book. It hopefully will hopefully it will help you to maybe look at things a little differently and approach things a little
even
differently.
Even if you get one thing out of it, even if you get one
it's going to be one really good thing.
And it changes one thing in your life, it's worth it.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And another thing, it's not my story. There's illustrations throughout the book of people from the founder and owner and of FedEx, one of the largest companies in our country, down to a guy who drives a forklift for me and everybody in between. And you, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, green, purple, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, agnostic, independent, Republican, it doesn't matter who you are or what walk of life you are, there are people and stories and illustrations in that book that you will identify with.
There's so many people hurting, and I think this book can really speak to a lot of people, man.
I hope so, bro.
It's called Against the Grain. Against the Grain, Bill Courtney. You can check him out online at, CoachBillCourtney.com.
CoachBillCourtney.com. And, I am Coach Bill on Twitter, Coach Bill Says on Twitter. You can buy it at all your – it's a national release. You can buy it on all your bookstores. You can go to my – website and click the little Amazon button and it'll be at your door in 3 days.
And if you're sitting at the house and you're like, okay, well, cool, I'm going to go ahead and download that. You can also hit on Netflix, Undefeated, and see kind of the story to see where Bill came from to get to this point.
And, yeah. And listen, if you're having a hard time, here's Bill's cell number. Just call him up. Hey, Bill, forget, it's me again.
It's BR549.
Something else you want to get in on is American-owned motor oil. And Valvoline introduced, how you like that seg? Woo! Valvoline introduced motor oil back in 1866. They've been reinventing it ever since. Valvoline, the only American-owned motor oil company, 140 years under the hood. And check it out. Coach Bill, thank you so much.
Man, y'all, really, thanks for having me. You guys are, you're two of the good guys, and I'm just proud to be here.
Oh, sweet. Appreciate it. I feel like we should hug now or something.
I think
let's
we
do
will.
That.
Cue the music.
We're gonna hug. Do we go to the dark room
this
where the couch
was
is right
the
there?
Podcast, but now it's over, but that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.